Welcome to the 28th podcast for BioBalance Health. This is Dr. Kathy Maupin, the medical director of BioBalance Health, and I'm here with Brett Newcomb, who is a lecturer and counselor in the psychological field. Today, we're going to address how to make a medical decision. If you're not a doctor or you're not someone who's been trained to think like a doctor, you might get muddled up in all of the doctor speak and options and suggestions.
It's easy to get lost in all that stuff when you don't know the terminology and you don't have the skill set. But there's a subtext message in this conversation to do too today, and that is that it's important to make a decision. You know, when you're just hanging in limbo and you are experiencing anxiety and frustration and fear, you get the information that you can get, and then you pull the trigger, you make a decision.
And one of the decisions you can make, there are options in decisions. A decision is to either follow your doctor's suggestion or to do nothing, which is a decision.
Well, yeah. I mean, I talk to clients about that all the time. That I talk about something called the cost-benefit ratio of emotional economics, because even to decide not to do something is a decision.
And people don't think that. They think, oh, I'm not going to do anything, so then I'm not making a decision yet.
Right. And I don't
fact,
have the responsibility.
They are. And yeah, and then they don't have responsibility for the symptoms and the problems that follow.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, we had an email from our couple in Cleveland, re-email. We've been having kind of an ongoing conversation.
Yeah.
And we've had enough transfer of knowledge between all of us that I suggested that they actually make a decision. They've been given all the information by their doctors and by me, kind of filling in the blanks. And now it's time to make a decision. But then I realized it's not appropriate for me to tell them to make a decision if I don't tell them how. And many patients come in and they don't understand how to make a decision about their medical care. It's very emotional, and the other side of their brain flips in. Their emotional part flips in, and they don't hear another thing we say.
Right.
So oftentimes I write down, even in my terrible handwriting, they can still follow what I'm talking about and what the options are.
Yeah, sometimes it's an issue of terminology, and so you need to be sure that they understand the terms that you're using and how they react to those terms, because people do. They numb out. They shut down. They hear a word like cancer, and they say, oh, my God, I'm going to die. And most people don't die from cancer. Most cancers are treatable and survivable, but you still, the common response to a cancer question, not even a diagnosis, is, oh, my God, I'm going to die.
Right. And sometimes it feels like dying if one spouse thinks that the other spouse isn't going to get, quote unquote, fixed. That kind of feels like dying as well.
Yeah.
And so then the emotional part kicks in and they can't really make a logical decision. But to actually make a medical decision for yourself or your spouse, you have to sit down and you have to get the left side of your brain in, your right hand, left side, that's the logical part, and make a list of all the things that you could do and what the side effects are of that. Because the process is basically figure out the risks of doing nothing, figure out the risks of going forward with the doctor ordered. And then there's always another option, which is another decision that you can make, another treatment plan that isn't as good. The outcome's not going to be as good. It's going to be the second choice. And you're going to have to put up with other things. You're going to have to suffer with maybe pain or suffer with emotional distress because you made the not so optimal choice. Now, having said that, there's no really good choice in medicine. It's not going to be easy no matter what happens.
Well, and what's good, Kathy, is that you're not selling. Years ago when I was in the sales field, they taught us something called the Ben Franklin Close, which is very similar to what you're talking about. And Ben Franklin would sit down.
I'm not selling.
No, you're not selling. And that's the critical piece of information here, because the client has to make a decision that affects their quality of life, their pain, their cost, their survivability. And it has to be their decision. Ethically, it has to be their decision. So good medicine is to say very clearly, here's all the information, here are all the facts, here are the protocols, these are the costs as we know them. Now you have to decide what you're willing to do. And so that's when they move to the Ben Franklin Close. And the Ben Franklin Close, the story is that whenever Ben Franklin had to make a major decision in his life, he'd get out a sheet of paper and he'd divide it in half. He'd label one side pro and one side con. And he'd put down all the reasons to do it and all the reasons to not do it. And then, you know, they would, one would become obviously longer than the other, and mm-hmm. that should lead you to the decision. The sales trick in that is that when you're helping a client or a prospect, you know, hello, Mr. Prospect, you know, make their list, you only give them the information that you want them to have. And so your side is going to be so much longer. But a good doctor, good medical treatment doesn't sell a response. They give information. They calm the client down. They help them focus on this is the data. These are the costs as we understand them. These are the potential benefits as we understand them. What is it you're willing to do as an individual or a couple?
That's why we have our website with all of our information, our references to medical articles and things like that, because basically I can't give every piece of information in 45 minutes or an hour. Yeah. I can't go through everything. And when I, in my old life, when I was doing surgery and delivering babies and decision making there, we had like 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't enough time, but if you took more time, you'd go out of business. So in any case, we had that much time.
So there's a balance, but the balance is driven by integrity. The balance is driven by what it is that you're supposed to do. You know, in sales, they, again, selling, if you were selling treatments, if you were selling protocols, if you were selling, because you had to do, you know, 75 hysterectomies this month in order to pay the rent, and so you're trying to find people to do
them. Yeah, but
that would be so unethical.
That doesn't happen in ethical practices. I don't even know how many you have to do to pay the, I don't even know that.
No, because, and most doctors don't, and they don't focus on that end mm-hmm. of their business because they're trying to do what you're talking about is help patients learn to make good medical decisions based on good medical information.
I think my biggest issue when I was convincing people that they needed to have surgery, mm-hmm. and there was never a, you have to have surgery unless it was actually cancer or something mm-hmm. like that, which was very infrequent.
But then it's still a choice. They have to sign the release.
That's right. They do. Yeah. But that was, I had to give them the risks of not having treatment, and those were usually devastating. Mm-hmm. And so there was much more on the side of doing surgery or doing a medical treatment for the cancer than doing nothing, which meant slow, miserable death usually. Mm-hmm. So in this case, the risk of surgery was a lot less than the risk of keeping the cancer inside.
Right.
But when I'm talking about hormonal treatments, then, you know, the biggest risk for testosterone is facial hair for women. And that's really that, and maybe, you know, some oily skin or some acne. But we have ways to prevent those things. Mm-hmm. If somebody has that, then we counteract that with troubleshooting. So this is one of those things that I usually go through the risks and benefits of both procedure or both things. Mm-hmm. The biggest risk of estrogen treatment is vaginal bleeding. I have a lot less risk. I don't even have to talk about many risks with estrogen pellets because they don't have the same risks as oral estrogen, and so they don't cause breast cancer, and they don't cause blood clots, because it's just like having your ovary back. We weren't at high risk for blood clots.
Piece of information that makes the services you provide different from what a lot of doctors do, because they don't have that information about the distinction among different delivery mechanisms.
Right. And you have to study that. You have to find all that information. It's in various journals in different fields. And so you can't just look at the OB journals and find any of that stuff. So you have to look into journals that are endocrine or cardiology or rheumatology or any of those that actually discuss replacement of testosterone and estradiol. So, but that's not the biggest problem. The problem is when I give estrogen, when anyone gets estrogen in any form, then they have to take progesterone, and their risk is that they'll have vaginal bleeding.
With the progesterone?
Without it, they'll get uterine cancer. With it, then they may have vaginal bleeding, but it's about 50-50. If you have enough estrogen, your uterus thinks it's 35 again and it collects lining. We have to give enough progesterone in a natural form to counteract that, but it doesn't always work. And people often bleed because they have fibroids. They have pre-existing problems, mm-hmm. fibroids or cysts or a spongy, soft uterus from having many pregnancies. That all gets reactivated.
So when you've run the test and done the analysis for a particular client in terms of their physiology, then can you reduce it down to a percentage risk factor? You know, there's a 70% chance of this for you, or there's a 30% chance of this for you?
Honestly, it's either it's there's a high risk or there's a low risk. When we get down to numbers, I don't think numbers help.
Yeah.
Because if it's you, it's 100%.
Right.
So if I've got a 50...
That's insightful.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't... That's why when they, you know, most
of our... So you worst case it. What if?
Yeah.
If we do this, this can happen to you. So what if it does? Can you live with that? How will that impact you?
And that's
how will that affect
your
relationship?
And that's how I usually talk about that. And that's, you know... That is an issue that you can then go forward and have something done about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not forever. You can actually have a procedure. So the issue is, if you take any estrogen, if you need it, and if you take any estrogen, then you may have vaginal bleeding if you have a uterus.
One of the questions that I always ask a physician when I have an opportunity to do so, and they're giving me information about treatment protocols and risk factors and so on, I ask them, would you do it? Would you do it if it was your wife? Would you do it if it was your son?
I think that's the best question to ask. And people ask me that all the time after I've laid everything out.
Right.
Then there's always a way that I think is probably better for the patient that she'll have. I mean, I'm looking for a treatment that's going to relieve them of the problems in their lives, like having to deal with bleeding until they're forever and having to actually be healthier, because it's not healthy to have a thick lining. So if they don't take their progesterone, they probably won't bleed for a long time, but they'll thicken the lining. So I have to stress what's
and that has its own health risks then.
Yeah, then the thickened lining can become uterine cancer, and that's not acceptable. It's not an acceptable risk.
Yeah.
So I make sure that everybody's taking their progesterone when they come in. If they don't want to take it, there are alternatives. One of those is getting an ultrasound every year, having a DNC every year, or an endometrial biopsy if they just can't take progesterone. There's always another option.
Right.
But those options are surgery, risk of pain with a procedure in the office like an endometrial biopsy. But there's no perfect answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody thinks there's some perfect answer where they can just, I can snap my fingers and it's going to be
gone. Yeah, a magic answer. Right.
Right. The closest I can get to a magic answer for this particular issue, which is the biggest, I don't have a lot of other risk factors or issues in my practice now, but this is the one we spend most of our time on.
So every choice costs and every choice pays.
Right.
And so when you're talking about the cost, you're talking about the medical cost, the physical cost, the pain cost, the discomfort cost, the self-image cost, and you're talking about the rewards. Mm-hmm. What are the self-image rewards? What are the physical comfort rewards? What are the
partner rewards? I mean, in general, it's a partner deal, because if you don't have estrogen, if women don't have estrogen at all, then they have dry vaginas, painful intercourse.
Which means they resist.
Yeah, and avoid. Well, who wouldn't, because it's painful.
Well, exactly.
And so it's not what it should be, because they have what I call old lady bottom. You know, it's just, if you don't, you know, it shrivels up without estrogen. But testosterone is an alternative, because testosterone can then, if they just want testosterone alone, then that can actually bring the vagina back to normal. So they won't have old lady bottom, they won't have the pain. But estrogen helps a little bit with some other feminizing things and counteracts the facial hair and things like that. So I would much rather give a balanced hormone environment to someone and create that, instead of creating something that's imbalanced. But if their fear of surgery, a DNC, their fear of having any kind of
their
office
discomfort
procedure.
Of bleeding.
Or they don't, but they're choosing bleeding if they choose not to do any of those other procedures.
Right.
So all of those things are things that are all negative, and you have to decide what you want to do. And that's the hard part. You have to decide what's acceptable to you, because some people are so fearful of surgery, they will not have surgery unless they're dying, unless they come in a car accident. And I can't take away 40 years of fear.
So we're talking globally about anybody making a decision and making a medical decision. In terms of this couple, you were starting to say they have all of the information that's known and available at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And what they need to do then is sit down themselves and talk together, honestly, about what are the next steps, what are the costs, what are the rewards, what are they afraid of, and come to a decision, and then go to their medical professional and say, this is what we want done.
I mean, their biggest issue is fear of having something done, or fear of bleeding, or dislike of having bleeding or periods, because you can make someone have a period every month on hormones if mm-hmm. you do it right, but they don't want to do that either. So is that fear of those two things worth not having a sex life?
Yeah. And what are the costs of not having a sex life?
Yeah, what are the costs of that for both people?
Exactly.
And for their partnership. Mm-hmm. So that's the first step. I mean, if you can't make that decision, you know, you have to make the decision to go one way or the other, sacrifice something. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the next decision, which is, okay, now risks and benefits of the offered therapy. And one was like a Mirena IUD. You can put that into the uterus even after menopause, and it has progesterone on it, and it seems to stop bleeding, and you don't have to take progesterone as a sublingual tablet. That works. It's been working in Europe for years. They've been putting it in at the same time as pellets. So, but we offer it, and we send them to their gynecologist for it. I used to put them in all the time, but it's a pretty simple procedure.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's a procedure, and it's right. in the office. So that's one option. Another option is to have ultrasounds and endometrial biopsies and cleaning out the uterus in the office, or having a DNC and an ablation where we burn out the lining. Those are all the things that we offer. Or you can just do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then your choice is...
But doing nothing is a choice.
That's a choice.
Yeah.
And everyone has that choice. When they go to a doctor, they don't have to do what that doctor says.
Well, and another choice that people can make, if they interview doctors in their area and mm-hmm. those doctors are not informed or not up to date on these protocols, they can come to St. Louis.
Yeah. We have people come from all over the world to come see us and get treated. And they just seem to come to the United States two or three times a year, and we have them have pellets inserted. It's not a daily thing. And usually we ask them to stay in town for a day to make sure that they're okay, because it is a little yeah. cut and pellets put in the hip or in the love handles. But in general, we don't have any major complications. We have minor little infections maybe, or some bruising, but pain
so at the end
for
of the,
a week. Some pain, but not terrible pain.
So at the end of the day then, the message for this couple and for other couples is do your research, do your homework, talk to each other, talk to your doctors. But at the point where you have done all of that, make a decision and live with the outcomes.
That's right. You can always go back and change your mind.
Yeah.
But especially if you
want to try the other outcomes.
To do nothing, you can go back and say to your doctor, well, I think I'm ready. I think the biggest, the first hurdle is jumping off that cliff into, yes, I'm going to actually accept medical treatment and do something to stop this bleeding so I can have the hormones I need.
Well, and to recognize that you are proactively pursuing a choice, even if the choice is to ignore that there's a choice.
That's right. You know, yeah. we talked about earlier, there's a choice in terms of hormones. I mean, I always try, that the reason I do pellets is because it's the safest. It's the safest method. It's the least likely for you to forget it, because you have to just come in two or three times a year mm-hmm. to get it. You don't have to think about it every day. So you're going to be compliant. And it's bioidentical, so it's just like your own hormones. So that's also safe, has fewer side effects than any other form of estrogen. And testosterone, there aren't very many forms for women, and the men's aren't usable for women because it has lots of side effects. So so the doctor themselves choose the optimal treatment, or they don't know what the optimal treatment is and just give you a choice, and you have to research it. But the choice is taking hormones and kind of backing up your aging process, looking and feeling better and actually being healthier. It really mm-hmm. helps both men and women to have healthier hearts, healthier cardiovascular system, but also prevents Alzheimer's and prevents obesity, diabetes, things like that, because you get a more lean body in general when you have more testosterone. So there's many benefits. And then the risks are, if you don't do anything, if you choose not to replace it, and then the risks are Alzheimer's, diabetes, heart disease, and all of these, and osteoporosis. I mean, there's so many things.
Which are all survival related for the individual, but then there are also relationship risks in terms of losing sexual intimacy.
Losing your spouse. Yeah. I mean, oftentimes this causes such a rift that it can't be repaired because the spouse sees it as, well, if you just do this.
Right. You're rejecting me because you won't take this risk.
Right. But fear is a very big factor, and they'd have to be counseled on how to get past the fear.
Well, and if they have questions about that and where to get it or how to get it, then they can look on the website.
biobalancehealth.com.
Or the other website.
DrKathyMaupin.com. Or they can call the office at 314-993-0963.
We would like to hear from you, and you can reach us at the podcast. There's an email address, and Kathy, can you give that?
Podcast@biobalancehealth.com.